Hopefully for you, it has been for me. Hopefully it has been a good weekend thus far as we've had opportunity to talk about family, talk about marriages, talk about our service to God. Always for me a blessing to be able to speak on this, and always a blessing, as Barry could certainly tell you, when you get to visit other congregations, preachers do get a tremendous benefit that not all Christians get. We know that we have brothers and sisters all over the nation, all over the world. A lot of Christians don't get to travel a lot and really get to meet that family. You know they're there, but preachers get to travel. We get to meet you face to face and to put a face and be able to, I was going to say, and to be able to shake a hand, but don't get to do that quite as much these days, bump a fist or knock an elbow or whatever the case may be, but a face-to-face with those that are our brothers and sisters. We don't take that lightly. That's an incredible benefit of being able to visit in other congregations. We've been talking about God's blueprint for stronger families, and we've talked about the fact that there are lessons in God's Word that are directed at changing the way we think and affecting the way we think, and then others that are intended to change the way we act and get us to do the things once He's got our mind thinking the right way. Well, this lesson deals back to the mindset again, things that we need to understand. Peter said on one occasion that it's putting people in remembrance of things. It's not that we don't know these things, but sometimes we need to just be reminded as to how serious it is that we have the right understanding of some of the things that God has said. This particular lesson is entitled A Marriage Covenant. Probably help if I turn that on before I push the button. As we think about making a covenant marriage, the passage that was read in our hearing just a few moments ago out of Genesis chapter 15 was God dealing with Abram at that time and making a covenant with Abram. And in making that covenant with Abram, He was going to make some promises to him. And it's interesting as we think about the concept of covenant when we understand that in Malachi chapter 2, when God was faulting those through the prophet of Malachi because they had turned their back on God considerably. They weren't trying very hard. He said they would come and they would worship, but they were offering sacrifices that weren't really without blemish. They were offering things they wouldn't dare consider offering, he says, to somebody else, but they weren't putting their best before God. And in that process, when they asked on more than one occasion, why is it that God would say that He hadn't found favor with them, one of the reasons was not only their sacrifices, but He says, because you have not dealt fairly, you've dealt treacherously with the wife of your youth, who is your wife by covenant, He says. And so God uses the concept of covenant to talk about a marriage relationship as well. What it is that we have with our spouse, what we enter into, the idea of a covenant relationship. And that's important because I want you to just reflect back on that reading and think about how that started. Because that's not a very pleasant scene. If you read Genesis chapter 15, there's nothing about that that makes you think, oh, this is very beautiful picture He's painting here. Because the first thing He does is take some animals and cut them in half. Head to tail. He just splits an animal right down the middle, and they would lay the two sides out beside each other. So I want you to imagine that. Take a heifer, do that. Split it in half, lay it beside itself. Take a ram or a goat, a sheep, He says, split it in half, lay it beside its other half. And then He's going to the nature of a covenant, especially if it was not on this particular occasion, it was God making the covenant with Abram. But when you would make a blood covenant, as it was called, between others, you can picture the scene. You've got all that blood. They didn't split the birds because they were too small, but you've got these animals split in half. And the people that were taking the blood covenant or making the blood covenant with each other would remove their sandals and would walk the path between those animals. So I just want you to get that picture in your mind because it's not a real pleasant sight. And when you come out on the other side, you've removed your sandals. What do you think your feet look like? I mean, your feet are covered in blood from walking through that path where the animals were. And as grotesque as that sounds, the idea was that then you could look at your feet and you would be making a promise that said, may I pay with my own blood if I do not keep the covenant that I'm making today. That was the idea behind a blood covenant. And so if I'm not willing to keep it, may I pay with my own blood as these animals have paid with their blood. Now, I'm not suggesting, for any of you who are not married, I'm not suggesting that you try to set this up as your marriage ceremony. It wouldn't be pleasant. I understand that. But I would ask you this. When you came out on the other side, what do you think the chance is that you would have at least forgotten what you had said or done? Can you imagine that? How long would you remember that? Because my wedding didn't look anything like that. You know, it was like a typical wedding with my wife in a beautiful dress and decorations. And I can still picture a lot of those things in my mind. Can you picture things from your wedding? How easy would it be to get out of memory having walked through the blood? Well, I think that's what God wants us to understand about the nature of the covenant we've made. We're not walking through the split in half animals in our wedding ceremony. But I think there are very much similarities that exist between that kind of blood covenant and what God asks us to do when we make a covenant with our spouse, with our wife, with our husband. Think about the things that happened in that. Abram's name was Abram, but he got a name change when he made the covenant. How similar is that to the idea of a wedding? My wife and I made a covenant together, and she took on my name. There was an exchange. You ever had anybody, when a preacher, one of the things I ask, will there be an exchange of rings? In other words, I'm giving you a token of the covenant that we've made. You're giving me a token of the covenant we've made. This just happens to be a covenant one way at this point in Genesis 15. This is just God. But he says, I'm giving you this land. I'm going to give you all this land. That's going to be associated directly with the covenant that I'm making with you today. The way that we have an exchange at a wedding. He says, your children are going to receive the inheritance of this covenant. Isn't that exactly what happens when we go through a marriage ceremony? Our children are, in fact, those who benefit from whatever it is that this covenant produces. And God says, I'm going to do that for you. A marriage covenant is an idea that I think is absolutely critical that we have in our minds to deal with the culture that we live in. Because think in terms of the kinds of things that you hear. Most people could respond very easily verbally if I'd ask for that to say, according to the statistics, what do you hear most often? How many marriages in this country end in divorce? Well, we have numbers that associate with that. 50% we hear. That includes second marriages that end. So even first-time marriages is somewhere around 35%, something like that. But large numbers are ending in divorce. People who are starting together and are not staying together. And then I would ask you this. If that many, that high percentage, are ending in divorce, how many are struggling that don't end in divorce? I mean, there are a lot. There are a lot that hang on, but they don't end in divorce. Is that what God wants for us? I don't think so. I think God wants to mimic in our relationship, as we said on Friday night, our relationship eternally even that we will have with him when we are married, when we have that big wedding where Christ takes us home. And so think how blissful that's going to be. Can you imagine that there's anything remotely on earth that you could do or that could happen to you that would compare into the joy and the excitement of the day you get to be joined eternally to God and Jesus Christ? It's like there's nothing on earth that could duplicate that. So he's saying, so imagine that joy, but he's wanting us to have an earthly version of that even in our marriage. And it is critically important that our children understand that marriage can work, not only that it can hang on, but that it can be the relationship, the thriving relationship that God wants it to be. And that's going to happen because of the way that I treat mine. Very important. They're going to watch mine to learn the things that they need to learn. And so what I want to do is look at four similarities between a covenant like Abram went through and the covenant that we have that you might call your wedding ceremony. whether it was a large ceremony or it was just before a justice of the peace, it wouldn't matter. The same concept exists between both. Just four simple points, and the lesson's yours. As I said, because this is not new concepts. Matter of fact, you probably should be scared most of the time you hear new concepts from preachers. It's the Bible's been there for quite a while. These are just things that we know are true. We just sometimes need to refocus. And as a culture, we need to focus, because I would tell you, these are clearly concepts that our culture does not accept. But the goal of this lesson would be that all of us would be able to leave this building today comprehending what it meant that our marriage is in fact a covenant and what the significance of that is to us. Four similarities. Think first. They are both agreements, promises, covenants that are made and vows that are taken before God. I saw a thing on TV and saw some articles, I don't know, just a few years ago, that Adam Levine and his band, Maroon 5, crashed a bunch of weddings. I don't know if you ever saw that. They performed at them. They just started showing up, and they would perform. Can you imagine if you were, especially if you were a Maroon 5 fan, Adam Levine fan, if Adam Levine showed up at your wedding and he was the entertainment that night? I mean, they had couples that were just ecstatic about that. What would you do if somebody, just think of the most famous, whether it's a sports figure, it may be a historical figure, it may be an entertainment figure, the person that is the biggest in your mind showed up at your wedding. Think you'd tell people about that? How many of those couples you think didn't tell the people that didn't get to make the wedding? You know what, I really wanted to come, but I couldn't get there. Man, you missed it. Adam Levine performed. I mean, that would be natural, wouldn't it? To talk about that. God says, I want you to understand something. The most important guest at your wedding was God. He said, I was there. I was there. Preachers say something to the sort, when I'm doing a wedding ceremony, we may say something like, we are gathered here today in the presence of God. You ever hear a preacher say that? Yeah, we're in God's presence here. How important is that to understand? We need to understand that when we gather like this, don't we? Not for a wedding, but like this. This building means nothing. We understand that. This building is not the church. We are the church. This building is not sacred. It is not holy. But what we are doing here this morning is sacred and is holy. It is us dedicating this time to God. And God says, understand, I am there. Act like I am there. Show the reverence that you should show when you recognize that I am there. That's what he said. He would have us understand. So in the presence of God, I loved when, I think it was President Roosevelt, that it was either Roosevelt or Eisenhower, when he was serving, he would worship at the same place. I don't even know what group it was that he would go worship with when he was in town and choose to go. And people knew that. And so people would sometimes go to that church building in hopes of being able to see the president on a Sunday. And the guy that had been a preacher there wrote about somebody calling him one time and asking him, where he said, we're going to be in town on such and such date. Do you know if the president will be in attendance? And the preacher had the greatest response, I think. He said, we don't know if the president will be in attendance or not. But we're quite sure that God will be here, if you want to come. I thought, how great of a response is that? Because that's who's there. He says, these are promises that are made before God. Look at Deuteronomy chapter 23. God says, you think this doesn't matter? He says, let me just tell you how much this matters that I was in attendance at your wedding. Deuteronomy chapter 23, starting in verse 21. If you make a vow to the Lord your God, you shall not delay fulfilling it, for the Lord your God will surely require it of you, and you will be guilty of sin. But if you refrain from vowing, you will not be guilty of sin. You shall be careful to do what has passed from your lips, for you have voluntarily vowed to the Lord your God what you have promised with your mouth. Every single ceremony I do when I'm doing a wedding, ask them to make promises and make statements before God himself. And so God is saying, all right, understand. So we go over this verse when I do my premarital studies. I want them to understand. I'm going to ask you to make a promise, and here's what God says about how he feels about that promise. He says, you better understand I'm serious about it, God says. A vow is an incredibly important thing in the face of God. He says, understand, you've made a promise. God says, I take that seriously. And God says, I didn't make you promise that. You chose to. Voluntarily from your lips, you said these things. I'm just guessing, but probably nobody in here had a shotgun wedding where somebody was actually holding a gun to you and saying, you say what I tell you to say. I voluntarily vowed. I'm assuming you probably did as well. But secondly, it's not only the idea of these being made before God. Marriage and covenants are also made before other witnesses. This point, I think, is so important for us. You know, Jesus, that's not a passage on marriage in Matthew. That's a passage you'll probably remember in Matthew chapter 18, because Jesus said, you know, if you got a problem with a brother, he says, you need to go talk to that brother. You know, we could do an aside here because you could get a sermonette, which would never hurt any congregation, because we struggle with this one, I'll just tell you, as Christians. We talk to everybody except the person we need to be talking to sometimes. But he said, you go to that brother. And he said, the goal of that was what? Not everybody needs to know there's even a problem. He says, maybe you and your brother can solve it, and it's done. Nobody even knows. That was good. You and your brother solved an issue. He says, but if not, he said, do what? Take two or three with you as witnesses. What are the witnesses for? To establish the truthfulness of what is going on. And if that didn't solve it, then he said, take it to the whole church. But he said, the witnesses serve the purpose of establishing the truthfulness of it so that there is accountability associated. If I go to somebody and say, here's what he said, and he says, that's not what I said, here's what I said, and that's the only two people involved, there's no way to solve that. So God says, well, then let's get some more people. Because then if I say, here's what he said, and he says, no, I didn't say that, I said this, and all the three witnesses are there say, he's right, that is what he said, that helps establish what was truthfully done, no matter what I say about it. He says, there's witnesses at your wedding. Think about that. Can't deny it. I read a great article, I don't know, several years ago, that there was a time in Russia where the best man had to pay a fine if the wedding didn't last a certain length of time. So that might make you rethink whether you want to be somebody's best man, wouldn't it? I'm thinking, if I'm the best, I'm saying, you want me to be your best man? I don't know that I'd mind doing that, but help me understand how serious you are about this marriage you're about to go into. Yeah, I mean, that's important to have witnesses. When Judy and I got married, we got married down in Florida. Our reception was, at that time, those that are familiar with the old Florida College arrangement, it was in the old Sutton Hall. Jerry Benson prepared our food for our reception. Wasn't fried chicken this time, but we're all in there gathered, and Melvin Curry, don't know how many people in here know Melvin Curry. He's not a big guy. He was about, I don't know, 5'8", something like that, small stature. But he could strike fear into you, both as a teacher and as an individual. It did help that he was a Gold Gloves boxer for years before he was a teacher. But he came up behind me at my wedding, and he tapped me on the shoulder. I was talking to somebody, just one of our friends. He said, did you hear what you said? About that tone of voice. And I'm telling you, I'm trembling. I'm thinking, I'm in trouble this time. I hadn't been a Christian very long at all. And so I immediately in my mind, because I used to use language that a Christian should not use, I had tried to alter that. I was working on that. But my first thought was, surely I wasn't cursing at my own wedding reception. And so I'm playing the conversation with this person that I had through my mind. And I finally came to a conclusion. Whew, as far as I know, no, I didn't use any profanity in this conversation. I said, I'm sorry, Brother Curry. I don't understand. He goes, did you hear what you said? And I thought, oh, what am I missing here? And so I started thinking, I used to gossip a lot. You know, I didn't care. Talk about anybody you wanted to, however you wanted to. And I'm thinking, did he come up behind me and I'm gossiping about somebody and I didn't understand that I was gossiping, I wasn't paying attention. And so I played the whole conversation through my mind again and still couldn't figure it out. And then finally I said, I'm sorry, Brother Curry, I don't understand. He said, I mean, when you were up front and the preacher asked you all those questions and you made promises, did you hear what you said? Because I did. And he said, I will hold you to them. That's 43 years ago. And I can still see Brother Curry ready to put a stranglehold on me if he needed to. I mean, I can still replay the whole conversation. All he was saying is, understand, people were watching and listening, and they serve a purpose in that arrangement. Did you have a registration book at your wedding? Those are always interesting. People, and they sign it when they go in, don't they? See, people go into the wedding, they sign it, says, I was here. That's so you know who's there, so you can send thank you cards and you know who you got presents from and stuff. That's not the way that started. You used to sign the registration book when you went out of the wedding. Because you were witnesses is what you were doing. You were saying, I heard what you said. See, I put my name here. I heard what you said. I'm going to help hold you accountable. You ever think of yourself that way when you go to a wedding, especially for Christians? You're a witness. You're there not only to witness what they say, but to help hold them accountable to the promises they made. Because they're brothers and sisters. He was willing to do that, to hold me accountable. And I appreciate that. I appreciate that. That somebody was willing to help me understand why others really should be attending weddings. It isn't just for the joy of watching it happen. It's because we are their friends, their family, and should help hold them accountable for the promises they made. Thirdly, covenants always, as well as does marriage, automatically indicates the seriousness of the commitment. You didn't make a covenant with somebody to buy a cloak from them. You weren't in there cutting cows in half to buy a cape. You don't make covenants for small things. They made covenants to make treaties between nations, to have families joining together in some kind of venture. Something that was extremely significant was a covenant. God was about to give to Abram the entire promised land. That's the promise he's making to him. The promise that he had already helped him understand would happen back in Genesis 12, that all the nations of the earth would be blessed. God is instituting that promise to him, that covenant, and saying, here's the promise I'm making, and here's how you know it's going to happen. I make a covenant with you this day. Serious stuff. In Ruth, that's the kind of seriousness. I mean, that's an incredible story, is it not? You've got Naomi, who's not in Israel any longer. She's down in a foreign land, and she's got sons, and her husband dies, and her sons die, but they'd already married, and now she's got daughters-in-law, and so she finally decides, I'm going back. And so she talks to her daughters-in-law, two of them, and they want to follow her back. And she says, you know what? This is your home. You stay here. And Orpah does what? She stays, but not Ruth. Ruth says, wherever you go, that's where I'm going. Wherever you lodge, wherever you stay, that is where I am going to stay. Your God will be my God. Your people will be my people. Think about the seriousness and the level of commitment of that promise. That's what we do in marriage. It just denotes the seriousness. One of the statements that I used to use, I don't use it exactly the same anymore, but it read this way. Holy matrimony is commended by God to be honorable among all men, and therefore is to be entered into, not to be entered into unadvisedly, lightly, or wantonly, but reverently, discreetly, advisedly, soberly, and in the fear of God. You think about how serious the promises you made were and the promises that I made. Well, I made promises for things like better or worse. We're in a culture that makes promises for better. Not so interested in worse. I loved one man's response. The preacher said, do you promise to take this woman for better or for worse, for richer or for poorer, in sickness and in health. He was already nervous. He's at his wedding, and he's trembling a little bit, and he's listening to the question, and he says, yes, no, yes, no, no, yes. It isn't six different questions. One question, one answer is all that's required. But that's pretty serious, is it not? That I'm promising regardless. It doesn't make any difference. It doesn't matter how Judy behaves. I am unbelievably grateful because she's been this incredible wife and behaved so well. But what if she didn't? My promise was my promise. That's what he wants me to understand. That was it. God promised Abram this land. And so because of that, Abram was going to get this land no matter what. You realize that? Now, he had other things later, blessings and cursings, and said, you're not going to be able to keep it forever if you don't and your people don't. But they were going to get the land because God had promised the land. He's faithful to his promise. I can't blame anything in my marriage on anybody except me, because I can only control me, and God expects me to be what I'm supposed to be. He expects her to be what she's supposed to be. I need to work on Mark. She needs to work on Judy, because we have both made a promise. Period. That's the nature of a covenant. It's serious. And then finally, covenants, like marriage, don't come with escape mechanisms. They're built, intended to be for life. I'm not saying God does not permit. He does. He does permit a marriage to be severed because unfaithfulness may come into that marriage. And God understands that as humans, we may not be able to get past that. But I'll tell you what God says about divorce. Anytime you want to talk about divorce, I always like to start in Malachi, because let's talk about God's opinion first. He says, I hate it. I hate divorce. Because it's a breaking of a covenant. That's why he hates it. He says people have made a promise, and they broke their promise. There used to be a group called Promise Keepers. Anybody remember the Promise Keepers? There were like 70,000 men gathered in a stadium in Kansas City, a Promise Keepers group. The whole concept was just men who were coming together in these huge numbers to say, I have made a promise. I will be faithful to my promise. That's the idea. That's what God is saying. God's saying, so here's the real question. You going to keep your promise or not keep your promise? This is not a contractual agreement. Covenants aren't contracts. Contracts have loopholes. A good attorney can search for loopholes, find ways out of contracts, because most of them have these little clauses, these little things that help you to get out. Marriage isn't that way. When they came to Jesus in Matthew chapter 19 and said, can a man divorce his wife for any cause? That's the culture we're in. Just for any reason? Can we just be done with it? I can remember when there used to have to be a reason even. But then you came up with our culture came up with the phrase, no fault divorce. And now every single state in our union is no fault divorce. All you have to do is file for dissolution of marriage and you can get it. You don't have to have a specific reason. He says, it doesn't come that way. Contracts, considerably different than covenants. Contracts are based on mistrust. You realize that? Because we didn't used to have contracts. People would just say, hey, will you paint my house? I'll pay you $500 if you paint my house. The guy would say, yeah, I'll paint your house for $500. He'd paint it, I'd pay him. That was the culture we lived in years ago. Now we have contracts. Why? Because I want to have some way I can legally go back on the guy if he doesn't paint my house or if he doesn't do it the right way, and he wants to have some way to come back on me in case I don't pay him. Because both of us understand the other person may not live up to their end, so we sign a contract. It's based on mistrust. Covenants are based on trust because it's a promise. This is not a if you. Abraham had no part in this covenant in Genesis chapter 15. It's not till Genesis 17 that Abram's got his sign of the covenant, which is the circumcision. But he had no part in this. This is God passing through. That torch and that oven that passed through, that's God passing through because he's the one that's making the promise. God never intended that there be escape mechanisms. He wants me to understand that what I did was promise based on five words in our wedding ceremony, which is the same in a lot of different ones, but I'm telling you, five words that have incredible impact as far as duration. You know what they are, don't you? Till death do us part. That's what I agreed to. Till death do us part. So if there are ever struggles in marriage, which there are, what God's people say is we've got to find a way to work and a way to pray and a way to solve this, because we don't have an option to just quit because we made a promise to God. He says we need to understand it as a covenant. It is serious business. I did like one lady's response that said, talking to her husband, they were having terrible trouble. She said, we can't solve this. We know we can't get a divorce. We need to pray that one of us would die. And then I'll go live with my mother, she said. So she had pretty definite plans as to how it was going to come about. So I understand we take it lightly sometimes, but I do think God would have us to understand on as serious a note as we possibly could that we entered into a covenant. The same as the day I was baptized into Jesus Christ, that's what I did. Jesus asked on one occasion, why do you call me Lord if you're not going to do the things that I say? Well, the day I was baptized into Christ, I came up out of the waters having promised, I give my life to Jesus Christ. You are now my Lord. That's the promise I made. So the entire rest of my life, while I'm above ground here, the entire rest of my life is only a question of whether I'm going to keep the promise or not. Am I going to keep my promise to my wife? Are you going to keep your promise to your wife, to your husband? Are we going to keep our promise to the Lord? I'm not any more committed to my marriage today than I was the day I got married. I understand what that commitment means. But you have to be fully committed the day you start. Then you learn what that means as you go along. But you're committed to do whatever it means. Same way with following Christ. I didn't understand. When I came up out of the waters of baptism, I didn't understand all the things that it took to be a servant of Jesus Christ. I continue to learn that. But I'm committed. Whatever I learn that I need to do in order to be a servant of Christ, I'm going to do. But the commitment is there. That's what he's asking you today. If you're not a Christian, are you willing to say, I will give him my entire life, even though I don't know where that will lead me? I promise to give him my entire life, everything I am, everything I have, because that's what coming to Christ means. He's not looking for partially committed. He's looking for totally committed. Are you willing to come to Christ today if you've never done that before? We'd love to help you do that. If you don't understand that, if you don't understand what that requires, we'd love to share that with you. Open up his word. Not what we are asking, but what God says we need to do to have that relationship. And for those of us that are Christians, and that's an everyday thing, isn't it? Every single day, it's a matter of, am I going to keep my promise or am I not going to keep my promise? Maybe you've slipped. Maybe you need help. If it's some way that you need help publicly, let us know. While we stand, while we sing this song.